Hi, my name is Joel. I'm from New York City, and I just wanted to call to make the case that the saluting joke is actually my joke, not Alec's joke. Now, my defense for that is twofold. Firstly, Alec and I have been best friends since we were five, and when asked recently, he couldn't quite remember whose joke it was, while I definitely remember that it was my joke. Secondly, ever since I've known him, Alec's record of being wrong about things has been unparalleled. And I think those two things taken together definitively make the case. Either way, this was a joke that Alec and I used to make to each other all the time, and Craig, our friend, dutifully asked if he could use it on the show. And I appreciate that he did, because I think that this will be my lasting legacy, and it will be how my children remember me when I'm gone. So thanks for putting it on the show. Bye.
I'm alone. What a pity I won't be soon in New York City. When I see you, please permit me to tell you everything in New York City.
Welcome to How We Made Your Mother. I'm Josh Radner. I'm here with my friend Craig Thomas. Hey, Craig.
Hey, Josh.
Tell us who we just heard from, Alec. That was your childhood Alec. Best friend, Joel.
That was Joel, my friend of since we were 4, 5, 6 years old, and went to elementary school, middle school, high school, and college together. High school was where he learned the saluting joke from me.
Alec, I gotta say, it is so generous of you to have acquired that recording and to have played it rather than just flushing it down the toilet. You're giving equal time to the other point of view. You guys, yeah. So just to give backstory, we had dinner with Joel a few months ago, Alec and I, and this got pretty heated at the dinner because Joel was not happy. He was like, he's so convinced it's his joke, and you have been so convinced for so long it's your joke. And I of course, borrowed this joke. I did ask permission for this one, and I put it into this episode. I think I did, didn't I? God damn it. Okay, we'll get to put a pin in that. Put a pin in that. You're a big man. It's big of you to put this in because I am convinced that you're convinced it's your joke.
I'm 100% sure. I'm 100%
sure. Like, it's not a bit. You really think it's your joke.
I definitely think it's my joke. And I have just a few words of defense, and then I'm gonna go away. First is, it's just the amount of childish and annoying that sounds like it would come from me. That feels like that's my oeuvre. And
that was your territory in the friendship?
It was.
Yeah.
It's your brand.
Yes.
It's
kind of still your brand.
I think we all know actually that Joel, when he believes in something, the vociferousness with which he fights for it is strong. It doesn't mean he's more right. He leans in, right?
I will agree with that. I will agree with that.
I will say,
but how old do you think you were when you came up? What age were you both when this joke magically was given to you by the gods? That's the best way to put it.
I came up with this in late high school, I want to say, pretty late high school. And then I want to also, to the court, if it pleased the court, Joel did make two mistakes in his little message.
Oh,
exactly.
Shit.
Which I think just eliminates his entire argument. One is that he said that he skipped over, Craig, the part where you were a huge part of this. He just went from he and I were using it to, and then Craig asked permission, which I think was rude. Because you were very much a part of the saluting.
He's a dog
culture.
With a bone. He's making his case. But we all went to college together, to Western That's University right. for 4 years, and we did this joke. We came up with variations, and it became part of our shared vernacular.
Awful.
I actually think I came up with that. I think it was my joke.
Possible.
I think I invented it in college.
It's possible. Other thing was, you did not ask permission for this. It was which is fine. I don't mind that. I just like that it shows that Joel is wrong about yet another thing. I believe what happened was days before.
I want to believe Joel on that one, though. I hate to tell you. I think Joel's right about that one.
That didn't happen. You just told me that it was coming up, and I was thrilled.
I gave you a heads up, like, hey, there's something you're going to like that's in this episode. Okay, so that's what I mean. I knew I did something.
Here's the real thing.
Okay.
If this was a throwaway joke that appeared once on How I Met Your Mother and no one ever mentioned it again,
you'd be
running from this joke. You would not be running towards this joke. The only reason you're arguing over ownership is because it has entered It is in the bloodstream of every How I Met Your Mother fan. Right. The major, general, colonel, right. Salute.
I mean,
that
I
starts
to,
this I episode, mean, by the way. This is, yes. We're talking about Slapsgiving,
yes.
Which is episode 9 of season 3. And I'll tell you, when the cold open starts and this joke between Ted and Robin is introduced, Jordana, my wife, said to me, oh, this is the, this like, she knew this thing. Joke, because yeah. we do this every week.
This is the origin.
This is the origin. She was so happy to learn it. And I will also say that, remember, we talked in season 1, we got a great, unbelievable note from someone who it's going through like a 36-hour labor, and right before the kid, there was a couple that loved How I Met Your Mother, and the OBGYN said, push, you're having a major contraction, and she turned to her husband and gave a salute before her baby was born.
That's the greatest use in history. That's the greatest recorded use of that, right?
Now, more than if women were not saluting on the birthing table, is that what you call it? Sure. in the room where their child was born, neither you nor Joel would be having this argument.
Really,
I'll tell you
true.
How deeply woven in, once you get it in your head, and you listeners, sweet listeners, you know that once you get this in your head, you see it everywhere. This morning, I almost emailed you, Craig, this morning, but I figured we would talk about it on the air. Did you see Pope Leo put out a big thing about AI? 42,000 words. The New York Times says, Pope Leo's major new teaching on safeguarding humanity in the age of artificial intelligence is a forward-looking document. And of course, I went, major new teaching on safeguarding humanity in the age of artificial intelligence. It really is like, once it's in your bloodstream, it's very hard to unwind. It's a very sticky joke. Yeah. That's what I think.
I'm going to give you a little bit of support here, Alec, because I did, I think, in another episode of this show, and I'm not going to tell the story again, in another podcast episode, I told the story of Joel and I having a days-long battle about whether the World's Strongest Man competition on ESPN2 was from the late 1970s or was current to that day.
Right.
And we had a 72-hour argument about it that ended with me saying I would throw myself off the roof of the campus center if I was wrong. And it turned out, and then we turned it on that night and it comes on again. It was like reruns again. It came on, a little Chiron came on that said like 1978. I look at Joel just waiting for an apology. He just goes, okay, yeah, and just walked out of the room. It was a marathon argument.
It also encapsulates what we're doing right now is a very How I Met Your Mother thing, which is like the fallibility of memory.
Fallibility of memory.
You know,
especially Joel's. Yeah.
Yeah. And in some ways, especially Joel's.
This is why you didn't invite him on in person, because he would not be having this.
If you're talking about a long winding story, like, you have to crowdsource that. Like, it's very difficult. I just read this thing Mary Carr said about her memoir, The Liars Club. Like, memoir is not historical. Like, it's not a recreated fiction. Like, it is a partisan undertaking. Like, it is a, you know, there is an agenda going on. There are things left out. There are things amped up and amplified. Like, it's very tricky to recreate anything.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And who knows? I mean, okay, we'll say we'll never know, with a slight 51% edge to Alec.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and much love to Joel, too.
Much love.
Before we get into this episode, Slapsgiving, which I actually really loved. I thought this was like
this
top
episode.
Shelf How I Met Your Mother
Me
episode.
Too. I love this one.
One of the best episodes of season 3, certainly, like maybe top 20. It, like, it's really good.
It's an all-timer.
It's really good.
Yeah.
I just wanted to do some housekeeping in terms of schedule. Just an update for people who are just on the edge of their seat. Are Craig and Josh ever going to have dinner? We just want to report, just with great relief and great joy, that it happened.
God.
It happened.
It happened. Yeah. It took 4 months, 3.5 months.
We
to 4 months.
A delightful, delightful dinner at Roman's. In
beautiful dinner.
Delicious. And shout out to Romans.
Yeah, it was delicious. And I learned how great Fort Greene is in Brooklyn.
You were stunned.
I couldn't believe it.
I took him on a walk afterwards.
It was the greatest. We walked Nelson. Nelson, who sometimes cameos, Josh's dog, sometimes cameos on the pod over Josh's shoulder, looking out the window longingly to wanting to go on the walk that I've now been on with him. And it is a lovely walk. That is a gorgeous area. I really had never spent any time there. It was just in the two blocks around you was like 18 great spots to go out.
I know.
Out
I kept pointing
eat.
Out like each restaurant better than the last. Well, I think Manhattanites, certain ones like you, Craig, you're sleeping on Brooklyn.
We're snobs. We are snobs. I know.
Yeah, it's not the 1990s anymore, my friend.
I wonder if we never said what part of Brooklyn Kobe was in. I don't think. Maybe she. Maybe she was from Fort Greene. Maybe Kobe, Robin, the character's name.
Yeah.
Okay.
But we had a great dinner.
We had
Craig, around the dessert wine, Craig got very amorous with
me. I got very amorous, a little handsy.
We had a great time. I'm so glad we were able to make that work. Also, I just got back from Rio, where my wife's brother, Gabe, got married to his beloved Issa in
Congrats.
Rio. And
what a destination wedding. My God.
We couldn't miss it. And we took our son, who did as well as a 7-month-old could do on, you know, this.
How long is that flight?
First we connected through Atlanta and then flew to Rio. And on the way back, we flew Rio to Miami. The long stretches were 9-10 hours. But but he did great. We're really happy to be home. But I have to say two things about this Rio wedding. One, I love Brazil. It was my third time there.
Let's go, Brazil.
Shout out to the Brazilian fans of How I Met Your Mother. I met a lot of Brazilian fans of the show. But I also have to say, our friend Alex is married to a Brazilian woman named Luana. They're very dear friends of ours. And they split their time between New York and Rio. And they said, our nanny is the best down there. We needed some, you know, assistance so we could, you know, go places.
Yeah.
So Isabella, this wonderful, wonderful nanny down in Rio, was watching our son for part of the time. We got immediately, like, we were there 6 days. We felt so close to her. But when we were leaving, she said, Josh, can I say one thing to you? And I said, sure. And she said, I love your show. She said, I love your show. I learned English from watching your show.
It was such
an honor to, you know, meet you and work with you this week. And it was just so sweet. So shout out to Isabella.
She only said it at the very end. I had no idea. That's also very cool somehow.
Very sweet. Very sweet.
And I wrote you this little ditty to sing to you in New York City.
We'll be right back. Hey, Craig, you know, now that I have a child, a baby in the house, do you know what I'm finding it hard to do?
What?
To remember to do?
What's that?
Eat food.
Eat food, yes. That's one of the basic needs that is no longer the priority.
I know. And I forget. It's like, I forgot to feed Nelson, my dog, and myself.
So how are we going to solve that problem?
Well, I just need something just quick on the go that won't, no muss, no fuss. You know, I just need to feed myself and get some energy so I can get back to parenting.
Yes. And so what would solve that problem? I'm going to steer you towards an outcome. And the outcome is this product you're about to mention.
Wait, are you talking about Bavarian Meats little Landjäger snack sticks?
We agreed that's what, right before we started talking to Zoe, we said that's what we're going to talk about.
Well, this is what I want to talk about, the great tasting Bavarian Meats little Landjäger snack sticks. They sent us some of these and they are delicious and they solve the central problem of my life, which is I forget to eat. They're naturally fermented. They're made with real ingredients, slow smoked for bold flavor, packed with 9 grams of protein per serving and have zero sugar and zero carbs.
Also, I have a 19-year-old boy. Also a good moment to get a bunch of this product because he will eat us out of house and home.
Yeah.
And he loves this stuff. It's so great. I'm very grateful we got to sample this. My son is going to eat it all. I'm going to have like none of it. But okay, it's a snack that keeps up with your day, whether you're racing between meetings or feeding babies or 19-year-olds, you're doing school drop-off, just trying to finish your to-do list. Take a moment to savor something delicious for you. Or your children. And did we mention they're portable? Toss a few in your glove box, your gym bag, the diaper bag, wherever.
We have a diaper bag.
I bet you do. Better have two or three of those bad boys.
Pick up a pack today at your local grocer or stock up at BavarianMeats.com/podcast. Use code MOTHER10, MOTHER10, at checkout for 10% off your first order. Bavarian Meats snack sticks. Great taste, zero sugar. The show. Hey, Craig, since we had dinner, any life updates?
Oh boy, any life updates? Let me think. The dinner was the highlight of my fucking month. Are you kidding? That was good. That was it. No, my daughter's playing saxophone. My son's playing the drums. We got a big salads concert for How I Met Your Mother coming up on June 20th, but this will probably be long over. That'll be long over by the time this happens. But yeah, the music thing, man, music is magic. Music is magic. I figured out how to play guitar with my daughter, and like I figured out where to capo the guitar to be in the same key as her saxophone, which I didn't know for a while. And you put the capo on the third fret of the guitar, you are very much in C with that saxophone.
Oh, that's cool.
And it's very cool with her. She has an alto sax, and we are like doing family band, like two or three nights a week where we're like all jamming. And it's like, it really, I become Marshall. I'm basically becoming Marshall Erickson, the family band thing. And it's fantastic.
That's so cool. Well, this episode fittingly ends with a great song. We'll get to that.
It does.
But this episode was written by whom? Was this a Bazin Thomas episode?
This is an episode written by Matt Kuhn. This was his second episode he wrote for the show. He wrote columns in season two. This was the first one that I kind of got to be paired as like this was my episode with him. Carter and I would divide and conquer on episodes. And it was just so great to see someone who was our writer's assistant or perhaps script coordinator at that time. I forget what his title was. Making this big leap and writing this great all-timer episode. It was such a delight. I loved when we got to give those opportunities to the many wonderful people who worked on the show with us.
Was he already at that point doing Barney's blog and doing the Barney books?
Yes,
he really wrote almost all of those, right?
He did. He was like the main voice of Barney kind of off network. He headed up writing the Barney Bro Code books that were sort of a spinoff from writing these great Barney's blog entries every week on CBS.com. There was a Barney's blog sort of on theme with the episode. And he showed so much just hustle. He just like did all of those things that we needed done, often for no money. Sometimes there was like a little money in it. But he really just did that thing we've talked about many times, Josh, of just like, he just loved doing the work and he wanted to do a great job at every single thing and raised his hand to do extracurricular stuff. And he became a writer.
It's so cool when you're on a long running show, when you see people rise from like, stapling together the scripts into like being a co-executive producer, being on set, pitching jokes, like, and also, you know, just a shout out to the WGA, and they're really fighting against these trimmed writing staffs, not allowing the writers to be on set. We've talked about this, but like, I've seen up close, like how you apprentice and
great verb, apprentice.
Yeah, that's was an apprentice. Yeah. Like, but almost like in the old timey sense of like you'd apprentice with a cobbler, you'd apprentice with someone to learn a trade.
Get your 10,000 hours. Yeah, get it in. Talk about the Beatles. Like, get in there, play a bunch of covers in Hamburg. Yeah, that's the Germany. And he was on all nine seasons of How Much Mother, started and as a writer's assistant, and then worked his way all the way up to co-EP. This is his first episode, and what a great entryway. It is such a great, I really, really love this episode a lot.
Alec, tell us when this episode aired.
This was November 19th, 2007, right around Thanksgiving time.
All right. And Craig, I would say this is both an episode, if this was your first episode of How I Met Your Mother, you get it pretty quickly. But also, if you've been with the show, it rewards your fidelity. It rewards longtime viewers, most especially with the slap bet, which is one of the great runners in the whole show.
Matt Kuhn absolutely crushed it with the script. It was fantastic. Yeah, this was one. This was maybe my favorite one of season three and one of my all-time favorites. And I think the reason it works, obviously it starts with this really funny, ridiculous Alec and Joel, whoever came up with the joke. I sort of thought of the emotional core of this episode because of the saluting thing. And I'll explain that idea that happens at the end, where that idea of friendship is reflexive. That idea occurred to me because of the saluting thing. Because Josh, just like you said, if you go all in on this joke, it becomes reflexive to you. You will do it while you're giving birth, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
And I thought of that. That idea just occurred to me, and this seemed like the perfect example of it. We wanted to do an episode where Ted and Robin really are having a hard time being friends. And I love how we planted the seeds of that in a few of the earlier episodes of season three. It's weird. They broke up. They're trying to pretend they're still great friends, but are they? Robin is now bringing a new guy to friend Thanksgiving that they're having. It is weird. It's weird to Ted. They have been distant. And we wanted to show an episode where they seriously consider not being friends anymore, and then something brings them back, something reflexive, something comes at them that just is undeniable and evocative of their deeper connection, that they're supposed to still be in each other's lives. And I somehow, that was the big core of this episode that happened kind of right away. That was right, yeah. the big idea of this episode right away.
Craig, I wrote down friendship as an involuntary reflex, which is what the narrator Ted
right,
says.
Right, right, right. Friendship, yeah. That's what we said.
Involuntary reflex. And I thought, it startled me because it's such a smart line. It's such an insightful line.
Yes.
But it's also, again, it's in a sitcom on CBS on Monday night. That could be in a Joyce Carol Oates short story. You know what I mean?
Like, yes. It's better than I just said it. I paraphrased it worse. Yeah. But that line.
The thought is really powerful, and it's a very mature thought. I know the mature character is saying it.
Yeah.
But you created a context or a structure where wisdom could seep through.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I think people like about the show. They get to see people having too many sandwiches or waking up next to someone they don't know, all the folly of being in your late 20s, mid 20s.
Yeah.
But you also have this wisdom and reflection, and it's contextualized as like, these were important parts of my life. This is what I learned. I'll say two things, both courtesy of my wife. When the cold open was done, I think when the credit sequence start, she just turned to me, she said, "I love this show." Which I just thought was so, it's like, and she also said, we were talking about how easy they go down and how you can see when, it used to startle me when people say, "I've watched the show 15 times. And I'm like, "Wait, what do you mean? How do you have the time?"
Yeah.
But the truth is, you can binge this show pretty quick. Like my nieces and nephews, like, watch this show pretty quick. you can watch it. And if you love it, you can rewatch it. It really goes down smooth. But also, Jordana was, she said, "I'm so glad they're dealing with Ted and Robin still hanging out all the time together." Like, she felt like it was kind of, in certain episodes, this thing wasn't highlighted. It just looked like they went from being in a relationship to then being friends, which is obviously tricky unless you're kind of divorced from your emotional life, which neither of them are. So she was really grateful that you guys were squarely journeying into the storm of this.
Yeah, me too. I'm really glad we brought that back up. We kind of touched upon it the first couple episodes of season three, end of episode two especially, and then it was kind of like, now they're okay, and that's not really how life works, right? You can say, now we're okay and move on, and it cannot be true. It can turn out not to be true, and Thanksgiving felt like a good way to say, like, wait, we're all going to have this Thanksgiving together, and Robin's bringing this new guy, this episode does so many things that are the best things about him, Yim. The fallibility of memory, the how I remember this guy. It's kind of like with Blah Blah. I remember this guy was a handsome 41-year-old athletic guy, played by Evan, one of our stand-ins on the show. Shout out to Evan. And but I remember him like this, and then it's Orson Bean, who we're huge fan. He was like a TV fixture. He was on he's a hilarious guy. He was on all these like game shows and talk shows. He was like one of those kind of guys in the 60s. And then he had that amazing turn in being John Malkovich, as John Cusack's really crazy and seemingly ancient boss in being John Malkovich. He's so funny and peculiar and unique that we've targeted him. It has to be him. He's so funny in this episode. I will say, I do need to apologize for the ageism on the show
we've got to talk about this.
Because I'm not comfortable with it.
Well, but I will say, just, 41. You know, certain memories, you know, we talk a lot about, we tell people you'd get big laughs at the table read, maybe big laughs at the network studio run through, big laugh the first time you rehearse it for the crew, and then it's diminishing returns mostly.
Yeah.
By the last take, no one's, everyone's thinking about
people
lunch.
People are looking at their phone, yeah.
Yeah. But Orson Bean, my memory is, laughter on every take. He just crushed.
So funny.
He
was so funny, and he threw it all away in the perfect
way. There's a bad way to do that role. Like, he let himself be the joke, and he played it like pretty straight, which is like so much funnier than if he like tried to amp it up and be
Yeah.
He just
He's so funny. RIP, we've lost him since then. He's great.
I didn't know that.
He was Phil Lord's neighbor at one point in Venice. And Phil told me, oh, yeah, I see Orson Bean all the time down at the beach in Venice, which I was like, that is a cool neighbor to have. Orson Bean in Venice.
Yeah.
He was a character, that guy, and he was very, very funny. But the 41-year-old joke is not aging well for me.
In some ways, though, you guys were onto yourself because even though when there's always a flash forward and Marshall's 42, you make him look 67.
He's 162 years old. Yeah.
But you guys in some ways were calling attention to, oh, this happened to me yesterday in the airport in Miami. I'm getting a cup of coffee and these two, I think they were in college, these girls behind me.
I'm nervous. I don't even know what's going to happen, but I'm nervous.
One of them says, my brother is like always dating these older girls. And like he's 23 and he was dating this 28-year-old. And she said, well, we should get married because I want to have a baby. And it's like, I'm only 23. And so he broke up with her. And my older sister is 26 and she's dating a 30-year-old because she likes older guys. And then she literally said, can you imagine 30?
Oh no. my God.
And I'm like standing, I'm in front of them at, 51. Looking like a decent, I'm holding it together, but I was also like, I felt like the Crypt Keeper's dad,
the Crypt Keeper's dad. That's a great turn of phrase.
But it also shows you when you're 22.
Yeah.
30 is ancient. 41.
Oh yeah. Well, look at us fucking little shits.
Are you
shits.
Picking we're, out your grave plot?
We're 32 writing that 41 looked like Orson Bean. And Orson Bean looked great for whatever age he was, but we were a little dicks of that age.
But you also acknowledge by the storyline itself, you acknowledge that to a 28-year-old, 41 can look.
Right. And Robin also says, why are you... And also, Ted is jealous and upset. Ted is jealous. Yeah. Ted is choosing to view this guy as ancient to cushion that.
Also,
weird.
Jordana said to me, she goes, that's our age difference, which is 13 years.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so we had a lot of fun with that one. But he was fantastic, and the whole joke is great. I mean, part of this, the reason I think this episode, I really like looking at when the show is firing on all cylinders, why it's working so well.
Yeah.
Right? I think, one, Thanksgiving is a perfect setting for this because Thanksgiving is when the nerve endings are raw and, it's a time of togetherness, but it's also often the time of conflict. It's the time where things get said that maybe might not otherwise get said, or it's a very provocative time.
Yes.
So I love the setting. I love... I think that How I Met Your Mother is best when it's bar and apartments.
Me too.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
It's like when it's on its home turf, it somehow is like...
Because everything in the universe can be contained in those. If you tell the story right, you don't need anything more. You can find infinity in those couple of sets. And you don't need to do all these bells and whistles in other locations. Yeah, it actually preserves the core energy somehow.
Yeah. But have the A story between Ted and Robin is like incredibly emotional. It's incredibly on brand in terms of Ted trying to figure out his romantic life.
Yeah.
And then the B story, I would say, the slap, is just like one of the most delightfully, it's the comedic motor of the slap and the five slaps and when is the next slap going to come. And Marshall's absolute glee in taunting Barney and Neil. And Neil's like terror, and he did something like where he pictured it and his eye twitched.
It was amazing. It looked like a
cartoon.
Do you
know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah. This quivering lip and eye and cheek. It was, and his bravado that you ruined it, but it turns out he didn't ruin it. It's even worse knowing that it's going to happen. Like everyone had an arc, even in those stupid little things, there was like an A, B, C, D, there was like points in the story, right? There was like an emotional through line for everybody.
Like Lily is really Mama Bear in this episode. She's both the slapback commissioner, which is like a Mama Bear role, and also like trying to create this nice thing,
and their
not
first,
getting help.
Their first Friendsgiving, which is a big fucking deal, right? And she wants it to go well. That's the other stakes of the episode. She's trying to create a tradition.
Right.
It's very sad when Marshall says, we're going to do this every year, right after we've just heard Ted and Robin agree not to be friends anymore. It's really sad. There's so many emotional moments in this.
It's also very chosen. This episode's very chosen family episode. Like, why aren't they with their families?
It's chosen family. And also, think about how the religious dogma of this friend group, the incredibly intricate, ornate religious dogma, the rules of the slap bet,
yeah,
the major general colonel thing, the incredibly like Byzantine, ornate sort of inner logic, this other language that this friend group has developed. The whole episode is about that. It's about their language. It's their
and again,
vernacular.
About like creating mythology, their own mythology.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's the mythology of this group. It's the native tongue of this group. And nobody else speaks quite like them. No one else has these inside jokes. And here we're at risk of losing some part of this group, or what's going to happen to this whole group blowing up. That's the stakes of the episode. What's going to happen? Or these jokes are all going to scatter to the wind like dandelion spores.
That's another reason I think this episode works. It's like, I don't know if it's chicken or egg, like things are extra funny when... No, I would say that's probably a comedic truth. Things are funnier when the stakes are higher.
And when there's real sadness along the way.
Yeah.
I believe that wholeheartedly.
Like the absurdity of the slap, which is so simple. It's like Buster Keaton simple. Like, shout out to Alec who loves Buster Keaton. But it's like, you take like the smallest little premise and you just explore it from every nook and cranny, but underneath it, parallel alongside it, is one of the elements of the gang, of this five-person, perfectly structured penta-something, is possibly going to be extracted. Like, it's really heartbreaking. You know?
And Robin and Ted are the only ones that know it, and Marshall's giving a toast saying, we're all going to do this for years to come, and it's really sad. And it's really deeply sad and then deeply moving that they, without ever talking about it explicitly, we see them decide to be friends via this amazing inside joke that Joel invented in their and Alex friend group.
Wait a second. Hi, I'm
just
still here.
Just wanted to see if Alex was still paying attention.
He's going to cut that out. He's going to cut that out.
He's editing
that. I'm going to cut that out. I also just want to just add, by the way, that you define this familial world that you've created of their codes, of their logic, of everything. And then what's wild, of course, is you've given that to the world who writes to us by the thousands, that they use those codes, they use those languages in their friend circles. Yeah. Also, you've sort of given that out.
It's extraordinary. It's extraordinary. It's world, it's global. It's gone global.
If you speak that language on, say, a dating site and someone else speaks that language, they will flag you. You know what I'm saying?
Like, we've heard it. We've heard
people get married because they like the
Joel's joke.
Yeah, they like Joel's joke.
Wait, it keeps happening.
Or they just, there's a kind of thing like you're a little bit pre-approved. Like if you love How I Met Your Mother so much and you meet someone you're attracted to who loves How I Met Your Mother so much, that is shorthand for a very particular kind of thing.
It's friendship is an involuntary reflex. Like it's that thing. And I like that we see Ted and Robin try to throw their friendship away and it doesn't take. They take this friendship and they say, we're throwing it. We're going to drown this friendship in the East River. And it doesn't want to go. It comes back around. It's like a horror movie, but a very happy horror movie that the friendship is like, nope, I'm coming back. You tried to kill me, but there's something here that is unkillable. And we're going to stay friends because of this stupid joke, because we speak the same language. And I love that moment. You and Kobe are fantastic in this episode and fantastic in that moment. I watched it with my wife, Rebecca, and I could tell she got very moved by that moment. She was like, it just clicked for her watching. I could just feel it.
Yeah. Well, it's also really nice that it starts off as this, you know, quirky, silly signifier of how enmeshed they are, and it annoys their friends until their friends start doing it because it's such a sticky joke. And then it turns out to be the very sweet, touching thing that ends the episode and lets us know it's going to be okay.
And it infects the whole group like an outbreak movie. The group is finally starting to do it involuntarily themselves. Yeah. We don't say who came up with it, Ted or Robin. See, Alec, it doesn't matter. You and Joel don't need to argue. It's just sort of born out of nowhere. Ted and Robin just start doing it. It's a connection. Does it really matter who invented it? Really?
It doesn't matter that I invented it. Go on.
And this old man, he must admit he fell in love with you, New York City.
And now, commercials. Support for today's episode comes from Square. Alec Lev, I believe you have personal experience with how awesome Square is, and go.
It is true. I was, hold for applause, the vice president of the International Buster Keaton Society.
This is not dorky at all. Please continue.
Yes, this is everything about what I just said is real. And we had a Buster Keaton weekend here in Los Angeles. We put a plaque in the ground marking the former location of the Buster Keaton studios. And we had an amazing weekend and we sold all this merch. And usually our organization sold merch online, so it was very easy. That was all set up. But we had tables, we had shirts and buttons and hats and pins and all these great things. What are you going to do? How are you going to sell things to the Buster Keaton fans? And we used Square. And we had one of the little, I don't know the right words, though I'm sure later on in our ad here that we're going to read, it's going to tell me what these things actually are. But we had a little square. We had a little square. And you tap it, and it's super easy. And then all the again, I don't know the real words. All the money goes to a place.
The money goes to a place.
Yeah.
I'm going to jump in and help you.
Sure.
Okay. Number one, thank you for keeping the spirit of Buster Keaton alive. He's one of the great silent film stars. If you're young and you have no idea what we're talking about, please go look him up. Two, so Alex the hero.
Yeah.
Two, Square makes stuff feel professional and easy and cohesive. It just makes exactly what you're saying, Alec. It just all of a sudden the whole operation feels put together and buttoned up. It's clean and easy, from the quick tap to pay checkout to the seamless email receipts, and you get loyalty points without even thinking about it. So you took something that is a passion of yours and you found a way to give it a shape and a structure to make it something professional. If you're starting a business or running one that deserves better tools, Square helps you sell, manage, and grow without slowing down. Right now, you can get up to $200 off Square hardware at square.com/go/yourmother. That's square.com/go/yourmother, all one word. Run your business smarter with Square. Get started today. End of commercials, back to show.
Craig, not to bring up old wounds or get viewer mail that whatever, but I want to talk about the finale for 1 second without any spoilers, which is the script for the finale was too fat for the amount of time we had. Even though it was a two-part episode, ads were very expensive. A lot of people were going to be tuning in. You guys had to trim the episode, right?
We did, yeah. And one of my top 10 life regrets is not fighting for like an extra half hour of that, but we'll get there.
You guys lost a scene with me and Kobe in the finale.
We did.
That I think is on DVD extras if you
still
have
the DVD. Oh, it is. People can go find it. People can find
it. It's even on YouTube, I think, right?
Yeah, you can YouTube it. It's like Ted Robin finale cutscene. It's a great scene. In retrospect, I really wish it was in there.
And it ends with a major joke, right? Like, isn't it
Yeah.
I forget what the exact...
Oh, man. It would... We should... Yeah.
But I remember the finale, which obviously is tear-filled and beautiful, or had so many moments that were so moving, especially like around the table. But I remember when I read it, I think that was the moment that got me, because it was such a signifier of their history,
yeah,
and their fondness for each other and their shorthand. And
yeah, it's their connection.
I think he leaves after she says something, and then he just turns at the door and gives her a salute, like...
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I get chills even saying it, you know.
But like, it's going to bother me that it's not in there. Anyway, we'll get there.
Hey, I have a question for you. Since you're so, since you and Carter were so rom-com literate, mm-hmm. the when they come to the Thanksgiving and Ted is talking to the guys in one room and Robin's talking to Lily in the kitchen, mm-hmm. and they're both telling about their night and with all the flashbacks.
Yeah.
It very much reminded me of, Bruno Kirby and Carrie Fisher calling
on the phone and the two split screens.
It's like the four split screens, right? Do you think that was conscious or unconscious?
I think it was conscious. We love When Harry Met Sally so much. We did many a nod. Some might call it ripoffs, but it's literally they slept together. It's the same beat as Bruno Kirby calling, you know, or Billy Crystal calling Bruno Kirby. It's I think that's, you know, that's like the Bible, that When Harry Met Sally is like it's just gonna get referenced. It's just such an all-timer.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's the other thing. I love that this episode had the flashbacks. It had the mystery. Wait, what crazy thing happened last night? We played with time. It had the inside jokes. It had the incredibly silly sort of B story and the very emotional A story. It's hard to do that every week. It's hard to do that 24 episodes a year and have all of those things firing. But goddamn, this one does. This one has them all firing, and it really is joyful, this one.
I'm trying to remember when did the Borat movie come out? Because there's a Borat joke with the wrong
how many days in a month.
But it was funny because like Borat at that point was like oversaturated and a little bit done.
Yes.
But there's something about it now that is like even funnier than when it was on.
It's so funny.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Later. Yeah. Yes. That joke aged well.
It aged weirdly well.
Yeah.
Because Borat just became like a thing in the culture rather than like a movie event. It's marked by time.
Yes.
So
yes.
That was great. speaking of another nod to television, I would say, and maybe because I saw it in college after a lot of sandwiches, but my sophomore year of college, we used to watch The Simpsons a lot, as college folks did in those days.
All sandwiched up.
And it's the Sideshow Bob Cape Fear episode, which I still think is one of the greatest episodes of television.
Amazing
ever.
Episode. Amazing.
So the way that Sideshow Bob taunts Bart and telegraphs, "I'm going to kill you."
Yeah.
Is just what Marshall does to Barney with a slap.
Siegel's like, so good in this.
He's doing Sideshow Bob about the slap rather than murder.
Yeah. Yes.
But it really reminded me of that episode.
It is Sideshow Bob. See what I got going on here with the turkeys? They're hams, but they're also turkeys.
Yeah.
He played that with such like absolute like ominous glee. He leaned into that speed so hard. He's great. Everyone was good in this. Everyone was good. Lily trying to keep, you know, the group from devolving into anarchy and have this one nice Thanksgiving and then giving up and getting drunk and going, "I don't care, get up and get out of here. This sucks."
Yeah.
Like everybody had somewhere to go. And then Bob was just kind of riding on his own, very chill plane.
But in some ways, Bob, not just because of the many, many hilarious old person jokes, which I want to get into, but it's almost like having Bob there forced, when an outsider is present, it highlights the insider-ness. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes. Yeah, I think that is a key to this episode. I don't think the episode works without Bob.
Yeah.
You absolutely need Bob.
And also what a like pleasant / innocuous presence he is. Like even during the end song, he's just leaning against the wall.
He's just chilling.
Having a great time. Yeah. Like he actually seems like a good dude.
Yeah, he does. He seems like a good dude. Ted's wrong to hate him. He seems very chill. And that song, and I will give Carter Bays, that is a Carter Bays original. I maybe contributed a couple little touches here and there, but sometimes like one or the other of us took a song a little more than the other. I just want to give credit where it's due. "You Just Got Slapped" is an anthem by Carter Bays. Just a frickin' banger all-time anthem.
Also,
I think it's gotten played at sports arenas, like when another team is losing.
Do people play it?
Yeah, if anyone knows where those clips are, I know it has happened. I think there was a team that did it a lot, like a hockey team maybe. That song is transcendently good, and the great Carter Bays deserves most of the credit on that one.
If you want Jason Segel to be very
see what giving credit is like, Alex. See what I just gave credit to Carter. I didn't fight about it.
Right.
See
Carter.
See what that feels
it.
Like. It felt good.
And it's just and so that's what we should tell Joel.
All right.
If you want to get Jason Segel very interested in a How I Met Your Mother episode, give him slaps.
Oh yes.
And give him a song to play.
And give him a frickin' all-time anthem. No, he was all in. He was locked and loaded. He knew this was a good one. This is just that episode that's good for everybody, including Bob. It's just like everybody plus Bob had like a game material in this episode.
And for me, juicy. I remember really liking this episode as an actor because I got to do what I felt like I was really hired for, which is the more sincere stuff as the romantic protagonist. But then we're deep enough into the weeds of the show that you guys had a lot of like go-to Ted humor.
Yeah.
And especially Ted Robin dynamic humor, which we had really found by that point. So I felt like both funny and I got to be like a really good actor.
Yeah.
You know, it was just like everyone, you're right. Everyone was in their sweet spot.
And Ted also got to be a little bit of a dick, right? He was a little sharp towards Bob. Bob did bother Ted. He pretended it didn't, but it did.
Right.
And those scenes with Robin in the kitchen and cooking together were really awkward and painful in a great way.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing you guys did was you never sanctified anyone. Like no one was ever, everyone had spiky, sharp edges. And I think that's what makes you trust you guys as storytellers and the characters as people you want to spend time with, because they have the recognizable whiff of reality about them.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. This episode is one of those where every now and again, there's an episode that's 22 minutes or like what you said about the finale. I always wish there was more time in every fucking episode we ever did. But every once in a while I go, this did all the things in 21 and a half minutes. This kind of did all the things. I don't think we left anything on the playing field here. This one just somehow fit into like 22 minutes. It's not even quite, I think. And it did all the things. And that's really hard to do. It doesn't happen every time. And I really appreciate this one.
Yeah. It must have been fun. Again, I always like those moments where I can picture the writer's room going, okay, 20 old jokes, go.
Right. What's a funny way? What's a really twisted, ornate, overly long way to say someone's old?
Yeah, I love really Robin is dating Orville Redenbacher. This is great. I loved
41.
Because I just like this because he's 1,000 years old. I like
that's not even a joke. Just
it's not even a joke. It's just like
the joke is
a
joke.
It's just to be him being a baby.
Yes, yes.
I liked Noah gave him shotgun in the ark.
Shotgun in the ark. Yeah, I love what there's just a little tight five by Ted there on old jokes.
Yes,
he's about to go into some Yo Mama jokes after that. But
exactly,
cut him off.
Exactly. But I also really liked. I remember liking Kobe and I being awkward together and the humor, like the, just, it's not, we weren't playing jokes as much as like behavior, you know?
Yeah. And what I like about that is it's the thing that did make this show different from the other shows on CBS and most other sitcoms. The show has a memory. It doesn't reset week to week. It doesn't shake up the Etch-A-Sketch. The memory is if two people are very seriously together, like Ted and Robin were, and they break up, it takes a long time for it to normalize. And sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah.
Sometimes they have to stop being friends. And the idea that it's not just like, and they're back to normal.
Yes. It's like things happen and they matter. There were consequences to things happening.
Right. There is a accumulation of emotional, you know, repercussions that matters and stays and doesn't keep disappearing into nothingness just because it's comedically convenient for it to disappear. Life doesn't work that way. Yeah. And often sitcoms do work that way.
Yeah.
But not this one. And I'm proud of that.
Yeah. You guys were trying to inject what you loved about like long form narrative and movies and books into a sitcom. Like you were taking a kind of tried and true form and like trying to update it in certain ways.
What happened last week happened last week.
Happened last week. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I love when Robin said I'd already broken the ice with my cool pie fact. It almost feels like before Robin dated Ted, did she have cool pie facts? Was that where Ted's fun facts like got into her?
I mean, look, there are connections between these two. It lines up. Ted would do a cool pie fact. These two.
I liked Crypt Keeper's dad. I had already mentioned that.
Crypt Keeper's dad.
I loved Kobe's run when I don't remember all of them, but when she said that is a truth fact.
Yes, that is a truth fact. That was a Greg Malenzism in the room. That is a truth fact. I think he was stealing that from somebody. He like heard that in real life somewhere and said, we're going to say it. But when Kobe says, you are correct, sir. She's doing the Ed McMahon. She's doing the Carsenio sketch, Ed McMahon. And we're just putting it, that's just a bunch of comedy writers loving, Dana Carvey doing Johnny Carson and just throwing that in the middle of Robin's scene with Lily in the kitchen.
Barney's meltdown is incredible. Like, I've lost 10 pounds. My suits are wearing me.
Oh, my God.
You're allowed to slap my face, sir, but you're not allowed to slap my mind. I said good day, sir.
I said good day.
Did he add I said good day, sir, or was that in there?
No, I think we had a thing for that. That was a shiny toy in the writer's room, I think.
Yeah. And just ending on friendship is an involuntary reflex. I just, I was always honored to be on a show that would say stuff like that. Like,
that's truly, cool. My memory of breaking that episode, like, I think I was, that was a me week, I think, that show, that episode, but Carter went off and wrote the song. You know, it was just the perfect division of labor. It was like, I was sort of doing that episode with Matt Kuhn in the writer's room. Carter was doing this amazing song and just making sure that was amazing and doing that with Siegel. It was just like everyone was doing their thing. And I remember reverse engineering the story from that. My favorite, the thing I wanted the story to be about is that line, Josh. I wanted it to be involuntary friendship. And like, how do we get there? And the thing I will give Alec and Joel credit, the thing that really sparked it was Major General Colonel. It was all that stuff. Major that was it. And I said, if we can use that, and that is what's going to be the through line of the whole episode. And I'm very proud of how it came out.
For writers listening, which I know a lot of writers listen to the show, because we talk about process a lot, starting, like, getting the ending that is like incredible and working towards it is a good writer trick. You know, it doesn't always work. Sometimes your story will demand it be something else by the end. But
it gets you started, even if you end up going somewhere else with it. But often you end in that spot. If you know that's good and you know that is where you will stick your landing, that's where you're sailing towards. It's so great.
And you also know that that's where you want the chess piece to move to set up the next story.
Yes. That's my favorite way to break a story, is to know what that core thought is, what you're really saying, what it really has to get to. And then it's fun reverse engineering to get to that moment.
It's almost like you could almost write the narrator Ted's final thought and then work backwards.
And how great
there.
Is Saget too? Bob Saget, another great Bob, two great Bobs in this episode. Bob Saget doing that narration is very moving. We've also lost him since the show. And I'm just finding, rewatching this, Josh, that Saget was just such a secret weapon of the show. Like, his narrations are so lovely and heartfelt, there's humor and
wisdom. The sound or the timbre of a voice is so important, especially when it's only the voice.
Yeah.
And there's something, you know, the show starts and it's just like stock footage of New York, and you hear Bob start on something. You just feel like you're in good hands.
You're in good hands. You feel very safe. It's a great feeling. Shout out to Bob.
I'm just really enjoying watching this show again. I hope that people are rewatching it with us or just enjoying this walk down memory lane. I did want to say one other thing to just close out this segment. We started off with a disagreement. If it was Alec or Joel who came up with this joke, I thought, you know what, there's a thing in this episode, which is, no, you did that, which was who kissed who.
Yeah.
And when I watched it, I was like, I thought Kobe and I did that as well as you could have, because you cannot tell who started.
You cannot tell. Yeah.
It's actually very Rashomon.
Very organic, too.
It's very organic.
You guys played that great. You guys are so good together in this one. And you guys are always good together. But you have to play like 75 different emotional beats in 21 minutes while there's fucking slaps and old guys and songs happening. And it doesn't feel like your guys' emotional story is short shrifted in any way.
No, nor does it feel like we have to cut through the noise by amping it up. It felt like we really trusted. I really love the scene in Ted's bedroom between the two of them.
Me too. It's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
It's really angry. It's really angry, and they're really ending it. It's breathtaking. I was on the edge of my seat watching
Like
that.
No one's at their best, but they're kind of at their best. Like, it's weird. It's So.
Oh, it's a good one.
Well, this was a great episode. I really enjoyed talking about it. We're going to talk a tiny bit more, I suppose, about
Alec,
it.
Alec, I want you to get in a room with Joel and just work this out, and you're going to come back to us. We're going to, I don't know what's going to happen. You're going to find a way to work this out. I just want to have one nice slapsgiving with you guys.
There's a kernel of truth in each of your stories. Kernel of truth in each of your stories. We have reached the part of the show we call the C block.
Who came up with this joke?
Joel. This was all Joel.
This is Joel's. Yeah, this is Joel's.
We've had a great time talking about Slapsgiving, episode 9 of season 3. We're having a great time every week on this show. If you are enjoying this podcast, please subscribe. Tell your friends. We would love more How I Met Your Mother fans to be listening. There are more How I Met Your Mother fans out there than our listeners of this show. We can assure you of that.
Yes.
But if all of the How I Met Your Mother fans, in the world listened to the show, we would be Joe Rogan. I mean, we'd be more popular than we'd be the most popular podcast in the world. So we'd like to get, we'd like to approach those heights. So please let your friends know. Also, if you're loving this show, as you know, we often play an audio clip at the beginning from a fan of the podcast or the show. We read letters in this last section. So please go to howwemadeyourmother.com, HWMYM, go up to contact. Alec built this website on Squarespace. Sure. And follow the directions. They're quite simple. But let us know how the podcast is landing on you, what How I Met Your Mother means to you. We love to hear from you. And today we have a great letter that Craig is going to read.
Yes, and I want to add, if you're DMing me or Josh a cool story or a cool message, please also send that cool story or message to Alec and to what where Josh just said. Because if it comes to Josh and my DMs, we might not get to it. And I sometimes discover them way after the fact. And so please send the messages to the podcast.
And by the way, also, if you worked on the show and you're listening, we know a lot of people that worked on the show were listening. We love to hear your stories. And please send them in as well. You can contact any of us however you want to, or just to go on there please tell us about your time.
And if you are a friend of Alex and want to steal credit for something that he came up with, please also send those in. From Harrison in Alabama. Hymium. I love that this letter has a title. Hymium, A Reflection Through the Years. Respect, Harrison, for putting a title. I've watched How I Met Your Mother several times now, starting in my late 20s. Each rewatch has felt like a time capsule, bringing back memories of where I was in life and how the show resonated with me differently each time. The first time I watched it, I was in the thick of my single phase. Barney, for better or worse, became a kind of misguided inspiration. His boldness gave me the push I needed to step out of my shy, late bloomer shell. Whether it was at bars, airports, gyms, or even once at a marathon, I felt his spirit urging me to take chances and not fear rejection. Looking back, I did plenty of things I wouldn't repeat, but I don't regret them. That era shaped me into who I am today. Years later, in my mid-30s, I rewatched the show and found myself connecting with Ted. I was ready for something deeper, but couldn't seem to find the one. I even revisited past relationships, wondering if maybe it had just been bad timing the first time around. But I learned that love doesn't operate on a schedule. It shows up when it's meant to, not when we expect it. Now, as I near 40 and watch the series again, this time with my wife, I find myself drawn to Marshall and Lily. Their partnership isn't perfect, but it's full of grace, forgiveness, and unwavering support. Watching them reminds me of what I strive to bring to my own marriage, kindness, humor, and the courage to weather life's ups and downs together. Who knows? Maybe the next time I watch it, I'll be a parent. And I'll find new meaning in the show once again. I could go on about how much this series and the podcast means to me. Thank you for creating something so heartfelt, hilarious, and real. It's more than a show. It's a companion through life stages. And for that, I'm endlessly grateful.
Wow. That was great, Harrison. Thank you.
Love that.
You know, it really speaks to something we say on the show that, you know, art, if it's good art, and I think we made some good art here, it changes as you change. You know, you enter it at different...
He took us through it. He took us through exactly that process. I love that letter for that reason.
I it reminded me of, you know, the evolutionary picture of like the ape turning into the human.
Like, Barney.
But it feels like there's stages of, let's just say, a man's life, you know, where, you know, you're trying to get out. I liked how he honored that the part of him that was like a Barney was trying to get over his shyness and his discomfort.
Yeah, I that was a nice mention of Barney. I haven't quite heard it exactly like that. Yeah. Barney made me get out of my shell to try to be a little bit absurd at times, and I needed that cartoonishness for 2 seconds to bloom or something. There's something nice about that framing.
Yeah, it's like the virtuous side of Barney. And then as you get older, you said, oh, I'm actually more interested in like connection and intimacy, and I would love to meet someone. And I like how... there was just the thing now alongside my wife, like just dropping that in, like, oh, he got married. And then Marshall and Lily, like, if you're completely far from marriage, children, you know, cohabitation, Marshall and Lily are not going to land on you as much. But once you get in that, like, they're your peeps, you know, they're your people, like they're your North Star.
They are your peeps. Now you're rooting for them. Yeah.
I also just want to say I've talked a lot about attachment theory just because it fascinates me. But like, you really can mark, again, the evolution of Barney is an avoidant personality. Ted is an anxious attacher. And Marshall and Lily are securely attached. So yeah. You really get this kind of...
it's complete.
It's complete. It's a real spectrum. Arc.
Yeah. Well, I love that letter. That was great.
Yeah, thanks Harrison. That was awesome. And we love hearing from you, so keep them coming. And thanks for listening. And if you have any information about whether it was Alec or Joel who came up with the Major General Corporal Colonel joke.
Alec, ask Noah.
Please write it right in. We need to solve this. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
I am guilty. Please acquit me. All sins are forgiven in New York City.
How We Made Your Mother is hosted and executive produced by Josh Radner and Craig Thomas. And it's presented and distributed by the Office Ladies Network and Odyssey. The show is also executive produced by Jenna Fisher and Angela Kinsey, and the show is produced and edited by me, Alec Lev. Our co-producer is Doug Matica. Our audio producer and mixer is Alex Reeves at Point of Blue Studios, and our Gen Z masters are digital content producer Emily Blumberg and associate producer Catherine Grove. Artwork by John Morrow. Please follow, rate, and review the show on Apple Podcasts or your podcast player of choice. It really does help to spread the word. Our theme song is New York City by our own Josh Radner, with additional music by Craig Thomas and Andrew Majewski. Special thanks to Sam Theobald and Elliot Connors. Go to howwemadeyourmother.com to learn more and click on the contact page to send us an email or a voice message. Your stories and questions are an important part of the show. Subscribe to Josh Radner's Muse Letters on Substack and check out his music and everything else at joshradner.com. Order Craig Thomas's debut novel, That's Not How It Happened, wherever books are sold, and read his other published writing at craigthomaswriter.com. And you could subscribe to my own Dead Fathers Society on Substack. To learn about How You Make a Difference, this show's ongoing campaign to raise funds for congenital heart disease research, check out the Make a Difference tab at the top of our website. People will, in fact, dance.
The real question, it just hit me. Am I in love with you or just New York City?